please help me welcome our first speaker, Terry S. from Conway, Arkansas.
I'm nervous, guys. Excuse me. I'm Terry. I'm an addict.
Hey, Terry.
I want to thank the committee and for asking me to speak. My disease is working on me, telling me I don't have anything to share, that I'm not going to be good enough. So bear with me. So our topic is emotional and spiritual crisis. And I went through a very emotional, spiritual crisis that shook my world to the core since I've been in recovery. I want to go back and start. You know, when I was growing up in my childhood, and then I went on to the military, and I experienced emotional, physical, sexual abuse. So I'm part of the Me Too crowd, and I know that some may have that as well, and that caused some trauma in my life. Now, like when I was using, I could always find justifications and rationalizations for why I would use, and you know, I always thought that if you'd been through what I've been through, you'd use too. I always had some kind of substance for any kind of ailment I may have. If I needed to go to sleep, I had a substance for that. If I had to get up and clean the house, I had a substance for that. If I needed to go out in public and be sociable, I had a substance for that. I had a cure for everything. And some people talk about their drug of choice. Mine was yours, okay? I liked anything that could make me feel different or help me control what I thought was control of my world and the world around me. And I went through life. I realized that at a very young age, and it was somewhere around about 13, I started noticing that I may have been struggling with some mental illness, and my family had gotten me started with, you know, some outside help at that point, but I was unwilling to accept it because I thought that I could control it. And so as I went on through life, and a lot of times when I would experience symptoms of my mental illness, I would always attribute it to the drugs. It was always something I did, you know, or I could explain it away. You know, I would have hallucinations or paranoia or delusional, you know, and all of that I thought would go away when I stopped using drugs. So when I came into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I won't say that I relapsed every time because I didn't really have a program that I was working. You guys told me to get a sponsor, work some steps, go to 90 meetings in 90 days, be of service. And I found a way around every one of those. You know, I wanted to do the minimal amount of work possible and reap the benefits of what you had. And I finally got kicked down so bad that I finally I surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. That's when I did get that sponsor, and I did start working those steps, and that's when the program started working in my life. At that time, I had already lost my children. I had lost my home, my marriages. My family didn't even really want me around. And, you know, and I always thought that I was a good mother because I didn't use around my kids. But what I didn't realize was that my kids didn't even have a mother because I was too busy getting high. And they were off with somebody else. And, so then, you know, when I come in, I had to start getting honest, and I had to look at that. So you guys helped me go through the court system, and you know, and in my case, it didn't look like I was going to get those kids back. And I've seen some crazy things happen in recovery, and mine was one of them. Because I had given my children away, but a law was changed that you could petition the court for guardianship to be terminated. And I was able to do that with the help of the ladies in Narcotics Anonymous. And when they gave me those kids back, y'all, I didn't know how to be a parent. And they taught me how. And as I'm going through these different changes in life, I have the women in the recovery that helped me. And because I can remember, you know, I got the kids and I was like, now what do I do with them? I had no clue. And you know, my sponsor was like, okay, well, we got to sit down, we got to make a schedule, you know, and that's when I learned discipline and routine. And so we did that. And then I got into a relationship later, and I found out what a healthy relationship was, not just with my sponsor, but with my spouse and my friends. And I could be that friend, that mother, that wife that I always wanted to be. And as I'm cruising through recovery, and I got, I was being of service. I was the secretary for region. I was secretary for my home group. I was very active in our program. Was working the steps with a sponsor, and somewhere along the way, in about 6.5 years, you know, I was, I'll be honest, you know, now I know that I became arrogant. I became complacent. I became cocky in my recovery. Like, I know what I'm doing. You know, I clung to the words on page 79 in our basic text that says we have never, never seen a person relapse that has worked the Narcotics Anonymous program. And I clung to those words. And as I'm going through life, life happens. Well, you know, I told you that I thought that as long as I quit using drugs, I wouldn't have to deal with the symptoms of mental illness. And I thought that working the steps could help me with my PTSD. It would help me with my childhood trauma. And it would help me with all of that, because I put it all down in my step work. But at 6 years and 6 months clean, I began to experience the symptoms of mental illness, of my PTSD, and I had lost track of time. And I had even went to the VA for help, and they had told me that they had done all they could do for me. And at that point in time, I felt that I had no choice, and I became suicidal. I was on my way home. And I thought to myself, like, okay, I'm not going to use. And because the thought was creeping in my head. And I'm like, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to do all of those basic steps that we learn early in recovery. And I know that if I do that, I'm going to be that never. On page 79, I'm going to be that never. But our disease is so cunning, baffling, and patient, and it waited for the perfect time to kick me when I was down. I was on my way home to commit suicide, and I jumped off the interstate and went to the store. And that's where I got my one is too many and a thousand's never enough. I did not think that one would start it, but it started a 15-day spiral. And I kept thinking to myself that, you know, my children would rather have a drunk for a mom than a dead mom. And that's how I justified it. And maybe it saved me that day, and it did. But that was a choice that I had. Now, this really shook my world, because then when I got home, I realized that not only Am I still suicidal? But I just lost my clean date. And I just don't know what to do at this point because the obsession and compulsion had started and I didn't know how to stop it again. I had let it in. And I tried to hide it for a couple days, not too well. But I picked up exactly where I left off when I stopped using. It didn't take any time. And finally, around day 15, my kid came to me and was like, "Mom, can we go ride a bike?" I just taught her how to ride a bicycle. And I was thinking to myself, I can't even get on a bicycle right now, you know. And so I went to my husband and I was like, "Okay, it's time. It's time. I need some outside help." And that is discussed because oftentimes when we think of mental illness, I've heard it by some that it's an outside issue, but when it's affecting our recovery, it is very much an inside issue. We do have a pamphlet, it's the pamphlet in times of illness that you can get from your groups, and it helps to identify some of the things that we may need to treat our illness. You know, it's not, we don't want the stigma to stop us. So in the Living Clean, where it's talking about the emotional and spiritual crisis, it doesn't want us to be confused about the insanity of our addiction, that we're not talking about the mental illness, because we do have the insanity of our disease, and that's doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And so what does that look like? Well, for me, that was me just trying to be a weekend warrior and just use on the weekends with my buddies, you know? That was me trying to control the situation of my emotions that I didn't want to feel. And it goes on to talk about the insanity when we first come in and we get our emotions back and how we don't know how to deal with them. And it talks about having a volume knob that you can't turn them up and down. So for me, I when I got back into the program, I knew that what I had to do was I had to start over. My therapist, you know, from he came up to me and I was just like, I was in shame. I had shame, guilt, remorse from the relapse. And I was like, you know, I was crying. And he was like, "Welcome back. You know, I'm glad to see you. I'm glad you made it back." And I was like, man, I had 6 years, 6 months, you know, I was so stuck on that. And he was like, "Okay, so let's do that again. You know, we can do that again. You know what to do." And he was right. I was able to lean on this program. And our basic text says that in relapse and recovery, on page 7 it says, "A relapse may be the jarring experience that brings about a more rigorous application of the program." And for me, that is exactly what happened, because where I felt the cockiness, the ego, and the confidence, or I won't say confidence, it was just a cocky attitude about the program and thinking I knew everything, and I was complacent in my recovery. I wasn't picking up that step work, you know, but I feel humbled now. I feel ignorant to recovery now. I feel there's so much more for me to learn and to grow. and I have dove deeper into our literature than I ever have. I have worked a very thorough first five steps with my sponsor, and this time I decided to pick a sponsor that wasn't going to sugarcoat things for me anymore. They wasn't afraid of people pleasing. She's, you know, I told you I was stuck on that page 79 about that never relapsing, and you know, I had a resentment towards NA for the longest. And, you know, and she helped me work through that. And I said, but I was living the program. And I quote, she says, bitch, you put it in your hands. And so I was like, well, that's pretty simple. That's not living our program, is it? And she said, well, if you don't put it in your hands, you can't put it in your body. And that's where I have found acceptance, is working the steps with my sponsor. I have an amazing sponsorship tree. I've got 20 months and 20 days today. And so I'm sponsoring women again. I'm being of service. I'm getting back into exactly what I know works, you know, and I don't have that resentment towards Narcotics Anonymous anymore. You know, I have a magnitude of gratitude for this program, because I was that addict that couldn't stop using for a couple hours. I had to have something to make me feel different. And today, I can sit here and be nervous in front of you and tell you my story and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I know that if you're struggling with any of that, that if you've been through it, you know, you don't have to choose the road I did, because you do have a choice. And there are options. And outside help is very much available. I really appreciate the committee asking me to speak. I'm going to stay in this process and continue to grow. Thanks for letting me share.
Please help me welcome our next speaker, Chris T. from Oxford, Mississippi. Yeah.
Hey, Ryan, my name is Chris, and I'm an addict. My disease, too, is at work telling me that nobody wants to hear what I got to say. But at the same time, it's been at work all week, telling me that, you know, there's people that share in meetings and talk about how they heard something one time at a conference and it sticks with them, then you're going to do that. People are going to be talking about you. And so my disease loves this. It loves for people to ask me to speak, and so it just sits there and just says, all right, we got him. So to help with my recovery, I'm just going to share my story and leave it up to the God of your understanding to take away what it is that you need to take away from it. I grew up outside of Memphis in the suburbs. I had more than most, I think. My dad was a doctor, so I never really wanted for anything. When I was 8 years old, my parents got divorced. I was the youngest of three boys, and I was the subject of a pretty heated custody battle. And that went on for a long time. I was the last one. I was the only one that didn't choose to go live with my dad. And so I felt like I was put in a position to choose. And I had to choose which parent I was going to hurt. I was in charge of a lot of emotions. And that's a really bad place for an 8-year-old to be in. It turns out we eventually, all that got settled, went to live with my mom, became what I felt like was responsible for her emotions for a really long time. But we never discussed in any part of my family at any time. We never talked about emotions. I was kind of left to my own devices. I will steal something that I heard in a meeting in Oxford one time, is my family treated emotions like masturbation. It's fine, just do it in your room by yourself and don't talk about it. And so I was an 8-year-old in this weird situation trying to figure out what emotions were and how to deal with them. As far as my spiritual life went as a kid, we went to church because we had to. I believed the things I was told because I was supposed to. And it, you know, it allowed me to do a lot of the things that I wanted to. And just kind of fly under the radar. Grew up being taught that we can do anything that we want to, that it's all an effort of hard work and willpower and putting your mind to it. I'm a third generation of self-made men that did things on their own. And so I thought you could always work your way through anything. Got to high school. I experimented like everybody else did, I believe, or most everybody else did. And went to college, and that's where it kind of started to get bad, without a lot of supervision. Discovering what made the uncomfortableness of myself go away. Sometimes it got worse than others. I got out of school, got married, had a kid. Bringing a son into my life kind of changed the way that I perceived things. I was able to experience what it meant really to be a father, to be present, and to be around. And started also to learn what emotions were for my wife. And still caught up in the things that I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to be caught up in. Still working towards what people thought of me, what my status was. And just really started to grow a little more self-centered and a little more arrogant in the ways that, in what was going on. My superpower of my disease is that it didn't really take a whole lot for it to change the way that I feel. And so I felt like the way that I was using was okay. I felt like that it was different than everybody else, and that it wasn't a problem. I had a good job. I had standing in the community. I had people that, you know, respected me. And so eventually I went, and my family moved next door to another family in town, and they were going to start a church. And so they asked us if we wanted to come and be a part of that. And so I quit my job in the construction and supply industry. And became administrator for a church in town. What I didn't realize at the time is I read or heard somewhere that I was taking a spiritual bypass, that if I got spiritual enough, everything was going to be okay. I didn't know that you had to actually become spiritual. I thought if I just put myself in that situation and played the part, that everything was going to work out and everything was going to be okay. So I go and I begin working for this church. I'm not a pastor or anything, but I work in the background. I'm in the administration. I help with the operations part of it. I do have responsibilities sometimes, meeting with people and doing some counseling, and but I continue to use, and I continue to be a high-functioning addict. It wasn't a lot, so I thought it was okay. My MO was to use for a while, and I was in a household with family members with chronic pain, and so my drug of choice was always around, and I didn't have to go very far to look for it. My MO would be to use for a while, get caught, and then go through the motions of, let's just take the heat off. Go to meetings, work a couple of different programs, work some steps, bullshit my way through it, pressure come off, and then something would happen again, and here we'd go right back again. I helped start other recovery programs, continuing to use on the side, creating this platform for me to speak, and the platform that I turned that into a pedestal. That's where my ego and my arrogance came into play. I thought that I was important, and my disease ran wild with it. The last time I got caught using was in July of 2020, and that was the last time that I used. For the next 3-4 months, I was admitting that I was powerless over my addiction. I wasn't ready to admit that my life was not manageable. I had it all under control. I was just going to wait this out one more time, and everything will be okay. So around November, or during that time, you know, my disease and my arrogance was really ramping up and taking pleasure in the attention that I was getting, everybody telling me what a great job I was doing, how hard I worked, how selfless I was. Oh, look how humble I am. And during that time, I made some decisions of taking advantage of some opportunities and putting my marriage at risk and the risk with my son. And so in November, I found myself alone, out of a job, living in a borrowed apartment by myself, and devastated. My life was upside down, that was when I realized, all right, this is not okay. The most loving words that my wife ever spoke to me during that time was, "You are so fucking sick. Get some help." And so that was November of 2020. I decided to seek outside help. At the time, it was still the Zoom era. And so I did IOP online. Not recommended, but if that's all you got, then take advantage of it. I experienced the Narcotics Anonymous program for the first time. I had a group of guys that surrounded me that did exactly what we always hear, that they loved me until I could love myself. I realized, like I said, my life was unmanageable and I had to surrender. I didn't have anywhere else to go. I realize now that the God of my understanding has been working from the very beginning through all of this up to this point. I'm in this borrowed apartment. I'm alone. I have really nobody. I go open a drawer, and man, there's everything I'd ever want sitting right there. And for whatever reason, I was not tempted for one second. I mean, I know the reason. I wasn't that far into Narcotics Anonymous, but my higher power had taken away that desire at that point. And for that, I'm grateful, because it could have gone really dark really fast. And so I share these things with my sponsor. I start working steps, and I start learning about those emotions and that spiritual life that I thought that I had been living all along. And I come to realize it's, yes, I was learning spirituality the whole time that I was working in a church, but I wasn't practicing it. I was trying to convince other people that that's what they needed to believe. I was trying to convince other people, you need to be like me. And but I wasn't living any part of that. And so I'm grateful that all of that got taken away from me. And I'm grateful that I got to that point. You know, my wife and I still talk about it today, that I wouldn't change what has happened to us and where we are today. She said, I might choose a different avenue for us to get here. I have a friend that always prays for God to keep him humble and to teach him what he needs to know, but to please be very gentle when he does it. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be up here. So as far as the emotional side of it, and the spiritual crisis, after getting clean and having some time, working through my first set of steps, I've had the same sponsor the whole time. I'm grateful for all this. I began to experience things out of my control that were really testing. I changed careers. I moved. My wife was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. And as we were in Texas seeking initial treatment, my mom died when I was 6 hours away. And through this whole process, without Narcotics Anonymous and the spiritual principles that I've learned here, I would have handled it completely differently. I remember coming home after work one day. My wife had been to chemo, and she just, I mean, she was the color of those chairs. I mean, she was gray. She was bald. She barely had any energy. And I just, all of a sudden, I just realized that there is 0% chance of there is anything that I can do to change that situation. Nothing. There is absolutely nothing I can do to change her health. All I can do is what's right in front of me, and that's to do the next right thing and to love her and to be completely present. That is a moment that I understood surrender in a different way. And I'm grateful for that, because I've always been a fixer. I've always wanted to fix stuff. I've always sought different ways to make things better. It would come back to those emotions that I were in charge of when I was 8. I was still trying to do that on the side, but I understood all I can really do is to be present. And that's one of those gifts of this program for me that I've learned, and I have really taken to heart. You know, I've learned in this whole process how to feel and what these emotions are, and to be able to share them, and to be able to call people and pick up the phone and say, sometimes I don't even have to know what they are. I can just pick up the phone and say, you know what? I feel something. I know it's not right. But I just need to share that with somebody. And that's okay. I've always come from this place where I need to know everything, and everything has to be in the right spot, and it has to be labeled. But it's okay to not be. Sometimes I just gotta call my friends and say, you know what, I feel shitty. And that's okay. And that simple act right there has kept me from getting high a lot of times. You know, another thing that I've learned is to be able to admit how much I was wrong about. And that's been one of the most freeing parts of this program for me, is I can look back on my life and go and just say, man, that was stupid. Or I cannot believe how wrong I have been about so many things in my entire life. And I don't have to go back and correct them all. I don't have to go back and go to somebody and say, hey, you remember that time when I was wrong? Here's what I really meant to say, or here's what I really believe now. I can let it go. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm not that important. When I first got clean, you know, when all that happened, it was sort of public, and I had a lot of shame, and I was really embarrassed and scared to go out in public. And a friend of mine from another program said, all right, go to Kroger, walk to the back of the store, come back to the front, buy a pack of gum, go back to the car and call me. That's weird, but okay. Got out to the car, and he said, all right, nobody gave a shit, did they? I said, they really didn't. And he says, you're not that big a deal. And so the humility that I've learned through this program is another gift. That it's not something that I learned growing up. It's not something, being the son of a doctor, doctors generally are not very humble. I know my dad was not. And so it's not something that I learned. And unfortunately, the path that I took wasn't painless, but I really am glad that I am where I am today. Today, my life looks completely different than I ever thought it would. I am in the process of, you know, probably moving to a new town and building a house and in a career that I have never expected, a relationship with my son and my wife that I thought I'd lost. And I'm not burdened by what people think about me. I'm not burdened by all the stupid stuff that I've done. I'm not trying to micromanage my life and everyone else's. It's okay that I don't know everything. It's okay that I can't fix everything. Today, I live my life literally one day at a time. I don't know, you know, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. One day at a time is all I can handle. I've learned that. I have tried to project out in the future what the rest of my even week is going to be like, and I am wrong every damn time. So it's just a whole lot easier to just deal with what I see in front of me. You know, to do the next right thing. I know what works. I know when I'm feeling bad. I know where the solution lies. I can go to a meeting. I can call my sponsor. I can pick up my step work. I can be of service to somebody. How quickly I don't want to do those things. But I know that as soon as I do, I'm going to feel better about the way that my life is going and be more content. I'm really grateful to be a part of this. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share. That's all I got. Thanks.